Well, you got a face like a bulldog looking piss off a thistle.
Zach, I can't do this.
What are you talking about?
I'm gonna choke, I'm gonna screw up, I'm gonna botch a move. I won't go over the crowd. Zach, I have no idea who I'm supposed to be out there.
Do what The Rock said, be the first you.
Oh, bollocks to The Rock! That's not advice, Zach, that's a tweet. He's not some weirdo freak from Norwich, is he?
No, but that is who you are.
Who else are you gonna be?
Come on, if you can't do this, no one can.
You're a knight. Wrestling's in your blood.
Like hepatitis.
A, B, and C.
Riddled.
Welcome to part two of our Fighting With My Family episode. But before we go into real talk, it's time for PP. That's our patron pitch. This is where we let our patrons know what they can expect in their exclusive patron feed, and we let non-patrons know what they're missing out on. So there's a lot of wrestling talk that might not make it into this episode, just because there's so much of it. So we're going to have to pick carefully what is the most relevant stuff that goes into the episode. Alex, you're going to be editing this one, so good luck to you, my friend. But whatever doesn't make it, patrons, you're going to get to listen to it anyway as part of our cutting room floor segments. That's available to anybody that's a patron from the ground up, Travolta's tier and upwards. Everybody gets to listen to the stuff that doesn't make it to the main feed. Just like everybody also gets access to the chat. The chat where we had a fun exchange of ideas and jokes and what have yous during the Oscars. You know, I was kind of staying away from Twitter and from all the other social media. I figured I would just focus my effort on making whatever comments I had to make on the chat. And thankfully, it wasn't just me shouting into the void. There were people shouting back, including Billy from We Watch a Thing. He's a patron. He's a patron through the We Watch a Thing account, which means that his co-host, Dave, also has access to it. And so at some point, the We Watch a Thing account started talking shit about Wes Anderson on our chat. And I was like, but Billy likes Wes Anderson. What's going on? And then it clicked. I was like, oh, no, it's Dave. You found an ally, Alex. That's what happens. If that sounds like fun, well, you have access to the chat when you're a patron. You also have access, like all patrons, to our bonus episodes. March, our bonus episode is on the movie Om Shanti Om. And Alex, our friend and patron Ryan, who demanded this movie, seemed a little disappointed that we haven't sounded too enthusiastic about Om Shanti Om whenever we've brought it up here on this patron pitch. And I told him, no, Ryan, if we sound mystified, it's just because that's not that. This is the kind of pick, as we've said, that we expect from someone like Brandon Curtis, not from someone like Ryan. So our confusion is not a reflection of how we felt watching the movie. I mean, I don't think there's anything confusing about Om Shanti Om, if anything. I mean, it's kind of what we expected, but you know, whether we liked it or not, that's of course something that you'll find out if you listen to the episode. It ticks all the boxes as far as most of the Indian movies that we've covered. It's really long. There's a lot of musical numbers, and the tone shifts are all over the place, and that can be a good thing and that can be a bad thing. We'll talk about it. I'll tell you this, and it's something that we discussed in the episode. It is not a cop movie, and that alone made it a welcome change of pace.
An outlier.
Yeah. No policemen, no terrorists, no criminals in this one. Well, I guess there is a bad guy he is a criminal. But yeah, Om Shanti Om, an interesting new foray into Indian cinema from the contrarians, thanks to Ryan. So you all have access. If you're a patron, you have access to that episode. It should be up by now. Now, if you want more content, then you get more content by going up a tier. Go to the We Don't Need, the $3 tier, and that gives you access to our pre-recording notes, give you access to our video reviews. This month, Alex is doing a solo quick video review on the movie What Keeps You Alive, a horror movie, and I am tackling the comedy, I guess, Deep Murder. Alex's is fresh, mine is rotten, so it sounds like I got the raw end of the deal here. Both movies assigned to us by Patron Stu from the Stu World Order.
Hell yeah.
And then, of course, that same tier gives you access to Contrarians After Hours. That's the spin-off show where we tell you about other things that we're watching, that we're listening to, that we're playing, that we're thinking about. Alex, we kind of last minute, we decided that we were going to do something special for this After Hours, a sequel of sorts to another Patreon project. Tell me the truth, Alex. Had you forgotten that Irish Wish was coming?
I did, and we talked about it too.
Yeah.
Yes, I had forgotten all about it.
I mean, we kind of made a low-key commitment to this Lindsay Lohan renaissance on Netflix. So her latest movie, Irish Wish, is out just in time for St. Patrick's Day. I mean, by the time you guys listen to this, it's that's long in the past. But
yeah,
as we record this, it was on their top 10 most watched, as you would expect, I guess, from a Lindsay Lohan rom-com on Netflix. And we both said that we would watch it, so we did. And that's what we're going to talk about in the After Hours. The second Lindsay Lohan vehicle produced by Netflix, Irish Wish, starring a bunch of people I don't know and Lindsay Lohan.
Seems to be the theme with Lindsay. And what was the other movie we did? I already forgot.
Falling for Christmas.
There we go. Thank you.
Same director.
God bless.
They got their foot on the door, on the Netflix door. So a fun, hopefully, conversation about Irish Wish on the After Hours. And then if you want more, well, you can have more. Just go up to the Embrys tier, the $5 tier, or the GAT tier, the $10 tier. And that gives you the power to tell us what to watch. That's what those people like Ryan and Stu and Brandon, that's how they get to shape what we see on the main feed and on the Patreon feed. So go to patreon.com/contrarianprime. Look at what we have to offer. Look at the tiers and see how you would like to join the Contrarian Supplements.
$1, $3, $5, and $10 respective tiers that Julio's outlined. Get access to all the wonderful things that he's discussed, as well as access to our back catalog of episodes, be it our Lohan journey, which, hey, no time like the present to catch up on in preparation for, what's it called? Shamrock Irish Shocker. Wish. Irish Wish. To catch up before that, our Roxana mega series, the journey we took with those two guys, and we're going to be circling back on that here before too long. And we have our goals out there for when we cross the threshold of 30, 40, and 50 patrons. We know we have some lofty goals out there. I believe at the time of this recording, we are two patrons away from hitting our first goal. So if you are listening and you haven't yet made the plunge, no time like the present. We'll unlock, so to speak, that first round of bonus episodes for patrons only. So to our current patrons, though, love you all dearly. The chat has proven to be a lot of fun, but we're always looking to expand our audience. So as I like to say, we're always taking applications for new patrons. They will be quickly reviewed and approved. So if you've been thinking about it, now's the time.
Speaking of goals, Alex, we'll go more in depth about this as in the coming episodes, but the live stream for The Cure has announced its dates. And as you would expect, we're part of it. The event is going to run from May 29th to June 1st. It's 4 days this time. Every day starts at noon, goes until midnight. So 12 hours of content, 4 days in a row. The Contrarians, once again, scheduled for the final day, the day where it all comes to a head. June 1st, that's a Saturday. Nick has us at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's 4 p.m. Central. It is, we've been aiming for this slot almost every time because I think that it meets most of the requirements for our international listeners. So I think it's really early in Australia and it's kind of late in England and then everything in between. Mark your calendars. We're giving you 2 months notice. Make sure that you are free on Saturday, June 1st, 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central, whatever it translates to in your country. It'll be a lot of fun. We're not going to tell you exactly what we're going to do yet, but that will be revealed in the coming episodes as we just log down on what we're doing. I think we've agreed on the goal, and I have some ideas, but Alex still needs to approve them. So as we cut through the red tape, you will be getting more details, but be excited because this is going to be the biggest one yet. And now, Alex, speaking of the biggest one, The Rock. That's what I was thinking of.
The great one.
The great one. Let's get into this fighting with my family talk.
It blows my mind to get to this point, 26, to have a freaking movie made about you. Like, how cool is that?
All right, Julio, I mentioned that the climatic scene of this depicting the Paige AJ Lee WWE Divas title match from the night after WrestleMania 30 was recorded, shot, filmed after an episode of Monday Night Raw on February 20th of 2017 from the Staples Center. So that would have been in the lead-in to WrestleMania 33. The Rock came out and said, this is what we're going to do. So they brought out Thea Trinidad, Zelina Vega, who played AJ Lee, and they brought out Florence Pugh's stunt double, who was played by Tessa Blanchard, which, if you know, you know, LOL. And so I think what happened was the scenes actually with Florence Pugh, you can tell the ring looks a bit different, like where she's actually doing moves and shit is in a soundstage or green screen or whatnot. But Tessa Blanchard and AJ Lee, played by Zelina Vega, went through the motions on this. But the big thing is this was 2017 and AJ Lee had not been in the WWF for 2 years at that point. And does the name AJ Lee sound familiar to you? Do you know who she's married to?
Oh, man. Fuck. Jason Lee? I don't know.
No. She's come up before. She's married to one CM Punk, Phillip Brooks.
Oh, okay. Well, see, CM Punk takes up all the space in my memories of him. Right. I don't know about the supporting players in his life.
So as you can imagine, hitting AJ Lee's music and having AJ Lee come out and it's not AJ Lee is going to make the WWE fan base, who famously has a long-term memory, think about CM Punk. So as chronicled in the trivia section of the IMDb page, but I remember when this happened in real time, it was the talk of the town. During the filming of the WWE wrestling scenes between Paige and AJ Lee, fans kept chanting the name of Phil Brooks. It kept chanting the name of CM Punk, parenthetically, AJ's real-life husband who left the WWE on less than amicable terms in 2014. In response to the chants, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, came back out to try to calm the crowd down. This is what happened. And he actually called CM Punk from his cell phone in the middle of the ring. And left a voicemail telling Punk that 15,000 fans were chanting his name at the Staples Center. Backstage, WWE producer Paul Levesque, this is Triple H, was said to have been seething at Punk's non-pre-approved mention, reportedly telling audio technicians, cut his mic. Does he realize we're in the middle of a lawsuit with this guy? A visibly annoyed Rock was then heard telling crew members at ringside, tell them they better not cut my mic. Soon afterwards, Levesque and Vince McMahon sent out a referee to tell The Rock to stop making CM Punk references, even though this was taking place after Monday Night Raw had gone off the air. Dwayne later said of the incident, I work off instinct, always listen to the people, and try to give them something special. Huge positive feedback from the fans. Fun night.
Was that a tweet?
I don't know. That's worded like one for sure.
It's like a page at some point when I think her brother quotes The Rock back to her. And she goes, that's just a tweet.
If I remember correctly, Punk commented on it and he said he saw The Rock was calling him and assumed it was like a butt dial or a wrong number or something like that. So he didn't answer it. I just think that story is hilarious. And it's honestly, up until I actually watched this movie, that's the main thing I knew of it and had in my memory bank was that story of, once again, Triple H freaking out about something The Rock did and The Rock not giving a fuck.
Never a dull moment, WWE.
All right, so as I mentioned, Valentine's Day of 2019, budget of $11 million, box office return of a bit over 40, written and directed by Stephen Merchant, based off a documentary on the Knight family. Dwayne and his ex-wife, now business partner, Danny Garcia, executive producers on it. You know, it's a fine movie. Knowing the source material hurts my enjoyment of some parts of it, but if I view it for what it just is, it's like I said, you know, the 1 millionth attempt at recreating like the magic of Rocky or something. We'll get a little bit more into it here in a moment, but it's 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. So Julio, it sounds like you had to kind of sift through to find some negative ones, some nasty green splotches. What were the critiques? What were the put downs of Fighting With My Family?
It's nice when it's like overwhelmingly positive on the tomato meter, because that means I can just like fast scroll and then the green splotches really stand out. I was like, well, let's pick this one. Question before I get into this. Have you seen that documentary? The one that about the Knight family? Okay.
I'm not particularly interested.
I mean, now you are, Alex.
No.
Okay, we're going to start with Jordan Rumi from World of Real, who says, a smackdown of cliches.
Yep.
That's a reference, right? Smackdown? Is that a chainsaw?
Yeah, The Rock says smackdown, and there's a show called Smackdown named after that, and it's in the dictionary, the phrase smackdown. But I always think the first time I ever heard smackdown was Dr. Dre said that, nothing but a G thing. So I think The Rock popularized a phrase that Dr. Dre may have. That's the first time I heard it. Who knows? You know, oh, fucking man. Julius Caesar may have said smackdown back in the day.
But smackdown, that's Roman smackdown.
Yes.
All right. Next, Louisa Moore from Screen Zealots says, fighting with my family feels like it was chewed up and spit out in a uniform box from the inspirational sports movie factory. Every emotional trope is trotted out on full display in this watered down biopic. Okay. But
what's the problem?
Louisa, how do you feel about most of those celebrated sports biopic movies that you could accuse of doing the exact same thing?
How do you feel about Seabiscuit?
Yeah. Next, Pierce Marchant from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, creating a film this pre-staged, as it were, serving dutiful dual purposes of telling Paige's story and acting as a PR bonanza for the WWE, seems a little out of Stephen Merchant's wheelhouse, and is more than a little disappointing. Were you kind of scratching your head when you saw who wrote and directed this movie?
I remember that at the time when it came out, I was like, that's weird. Must have been good money, you know, something like that. But I remember thinking money must be good. Yeah. You know, I don't, again, like the Vince Vaughn thing. I don't know if it's just The Rock met him and liked him or what happened, but it seems the parts of this movie are very fascinating to me.
I mean, it could be as simple as he just likes wrestling. Who's to say how Stephen Merchant feels about Monday Night Raw and WrestleMania? And we're going to close with Fred Topple from Monsters and Critics, who says, unfortunately, Paige and her family's success story gets watered down by the Hollywood machine. Alex, I am not familiar with Paige's story. I mean, you've made a couple comments here and there, but even, you know, if I hadn't you as a reference, as a source of information, I would still assume that this was, that whatever happened in real life was not the fairy tale that is depicted in this movie, because I'm an adult and I know how the world works. And I know that there is such a thing as a crowd-pleasing sports biopic, and those movies, if they're aiming to be, you know, if they want to make money, if they want to be a blockbuster, they're going to sand the edges off and streamline the story and bring The Rock to play himself and all that stuff. So it seems like a weird criticism, but also I am not invested in this story, as in, like, I'm not a wrestling fan that would be upset at how they're representing part of the history of my passion, right? If I'm invested in wrestling and somebody gives me some bullshit Candyland version of it on the screen, maybe that would upset me. I mean, I don't know. Do we live in a world, and I like to believe that we do, where you can have stuff like the Iron Claw and the Wrestler, but you can also have something like Fighting With My Family, and they don't have to be at war with each other when it comes to, you know, what they do for their audiences.
So what sort of people enjoy wrestling?
That's a good question.
I mean, it's all fake anyway, isn't it? So it's
You're the wrestling fan, so I mean, I think that you have a very different.
I also like Ready to Rumble, like, so it's, you know.
I was trying to keep it classy, but okay, if you must.
I would say absolutely yes, because, you know, even I still think The Wrestler does some things exponentially better than the Iron Claw. But yeah, I mean, this movie's fine. It doesn't make wrestling look dumb in the way that, you know, No Holds Barred or Ready to Rumble, and I'm sure there's a handful of other movies I could find and we could discuss here, but these are kind of some of the big ones. And yeah, man, for the effort put into this, I think it's fair to kind of mention it with some of the big boys of the genre, but it's not The Wrestler because it doesn't want to be. No other movie about wrestling is The Wrestler, but that's also because The Wrestler has like one of the single greatest acting performances of, I don't know, last 50 years in it. And
not as good as Champagne and Milk, though.
Apparently not. Yeah, man, I think it's fine. I think it's Warrior. How many, you know, I loved Warrior, and how fucking cliche ridden is that movie? You and I are both, it's kind of a guilty pleasure for us. Here Comes the Boom, which yep. is just obviously a very, very cliche ridden sports movie.
With more realistic fighting than Warrior.
Shockingly, it's true. With this, it's, I do have the burden of knowing the story of the Knight family and then also like what happened after this. But it's just plain as day. The Rock got obsessed with this idea of making this movie about this wrestling family because at the Young Rock show, remember he made that shit. Like he's just obsessed with this idea of not only sharing his story. Well, that comes first, but then also the idea of like this multi-generational family of wrestlers, because that's how he made his original steps in stardom. And I can see him just being in a hotel room, you know, some giant suite and watching this and then, hey, calling his agent. The Rock's got an idea. Jot this down. We're going to do a movie about this UK family. And, you know, in the long scheme of it all, it's a pretty innocuous story. And then if you even want to narrow it down more, there's way more interesting stories from British wrestling that deserve a movie. The big fella in their wrestling school, or like that wrestles on their shows, that at the beginning of the movie, Nick Frost hits in the head with a garbage can lid.
Oh, and then the bowling ball to the nuts.
Yes. He's wearing a big singlet of the Union Jack and it says Union Jack on it. This is a very obvious homage to Shirley Crabtree, who wrestled as Big Daddy in the 70s in the United Kingdom. And he was a fucking sensation. He was a ratings bonanza on television. He was a terrible wrestler. He was just a big fat dude who ran around and bumped into people. But kids loved him and he was a big star. And like his story to me is so much more interesting than just this family of vagabonds that, you know, would sell each other out to make a buck. And, you know, even something like Tommy Billington, like the Dynamite Kid, that's his story is more interesting to me than this story. But it's the family aspect of it that I know Dwayne just clung to and was like, yes, I will make this movie happen.
But also the I think maybe the crowd friendly, like when we're talking about crowd pleasing, this is because that was going to be my follow-up question. I'm like, maybe those negative reviews, especially that last quote, is not about the it's not about the watering down of wrestling. It's about the watering down of the specific Paige story, because I don't know the story. So is it just that somebody that's a fan of Paige feels like her movie should have been grittier?
Oh, where do we get into this discussion at this point? So my whole thing with Paige is like, I kind of feel for her and then I don't, because she's kind of an idiot. I don't think she really ever had an option or a choice at life. You know, like she, her mother was wrestling while she was pregnant with her and they trotted her out there when she was 13. And it sounds like one of the kids got away, you know, and that's good. But she had the two brothers and one of them was in prison for a while. She has another brother that I don't know the whole story on this. So I'm just going to say what I do know is that he's in a an institution and that I think she sees him like once a decade, maybe, or something like that. And I just don't think she really ever had a choice. And that's not exclusive to her. Don't get me wrong. There's the Guerreros, the Harts, the Von Erichs, very recently brought to light. Those wrestling families are just destructive, by and large, you know, freakish stage parents. Fritz, Stu Hart. And it's just, it's what's expected of you. The difference with Paige, though, is she's obviously a woman. And all these other folks I've mentioned are dudes. And so I can't imagine her ascent was fun. Those youthful years where, you know, she's a teenager who should be out playing with her friends and shit. And her families instead, bringing around these locker rooms of derelicts and fucking, I keep using the word carnies, but that's what they are. And so I've always kind of felt that the idea of this movie could potentially minimize what it was actually like for her. But, you know, she was at the premiere and she's benefited from it, I think. And she's friends with Florence Pugh now, so she's got that going for her. I just honestly, I don't know what I'd want this movie to be, because I don't want a movie about Paige to begin with. It's the story of their family is one that I find kind of frustrating. And I said for her specifically, because when this movie came out in 2019, she was already forced to retire. She got a series of neck injuries in the WWE and they never cleared her to wrestle again. And fittingly, oddly, ironically, morbidly enough, her retirement speech was at the Smoothie King Center in New Orleans, 4 years after she won the title there from AJ Lee. And I remember sitting there and finding myself a bit more like, emotional is an intense word, but a bit more, just kind of taken by the moment than I expected. And that's because of what I said. I feel like this, I don't know what she would have done, but I feel like she's a young lady that never really had a choice in life. And as much as I love wrestling and as much as I give all these people shit because they deserve it for being fake fighters, and as much as I give myself shit because I've spent thousands and thousands of dollars and traveled thousands and thousands of miles to support said fake fighting. So I am just as much to blame as the actual people involved. But I have always viewed her as kind of a sympathetic figure. She also had a very abusive relationship with another wrestler, and there was a pretty serious situation where some personal videos and pictures of her were leaked, to the point where her dad at one point made like a public statement, like, if anyone's seen my daughter, help me. I kind of wish she had had a choice to maybe do something else with her life that wouldn't have exposed her to all these other evils of the world and vices, because I know she had some issues with substances and alcohol and shit. And it's just, I don't know. Am I making any sense with what I'm saying here?
Yeah, yeah. But I as you're telling it, I'm like, yeah, you can make a movie out of that. I mean,
yeah, it's definitely not this movie.
Exactly, not this movie. And I think that if somebody has... I feel like maybe there's a case to be made by somebody that maybe feels about it more strongly than you do, just with that same set of facts. And they say, look, you only get to make one Paige movie, right? One movie about Paige's life. Maybe it should be the gritty wrestler / Iron Claw version, like tone wise.
But then you don't get that funding egg because the WWE logo is not going to be anywhere to be found on there.
Exactly. And maybe she doesn't want that movie made. She's like, no, you know, if you're going to make a movie about my life, let's give it the spin of like the inspirational fun story about how, you know, I did some stuff that was kind of groundbreaking, and, you know, we can put it as, you know, the women's movement and all that stuff. And I mean, I'm assuming she had a say a little bit, at least, in how, you know, I don't think that The Rock just said, OK, I'm taking your life and I'm making the movie. She has to have had some input.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah. So I guess in that sense, if this is the movie about her life that she wants to make, then more power to her. But the people are saying, well, this is just watered down bullshit, watered down Hollywood bullshit. I guess their argument is that, you know, you could have gotten the Scorsese or Spike Lee Paige biopic where you really delve into like the harshness of her upbringing. And if you get to see her success, it's only short lived. And then you go back to just the bad stuff. Although I guess at the time that they were making this movie, she was still wrestling, right? You said she was forced to retire. Oh, she was done already by the time they were shooting? Oh, that sucks.
Retirement came in, well, I don't know about the time they were shooting, because if they were shooting this in 2017, she was still active, but she officially stepped away in April of 2018 for that time being.
Paige's time with the NXT is over.
Okay.
Because tomorrow night she'll make her debut live on Raw, and she will be fighting AJ Lee for the Divas title.
Yeah, I mean, that is that's why I've always had that. I will watch biopics. I will enjoy biopics, whatever, but I've never been interested in the idea of crafting a biopic seems like such dangerous waters, so complicated. I'm like, you know, let's just come up with a story from scratch, because that way we don't have to worry about how reality will affect the perception of the people watching our movie. I went into fighting with my family the first time I watched it, completely like not knowing anything. And so I had that advantage, you know, I guess I had that privilege in a way of experiencing it only as a movie. And so I can, you know, that's something that you never would have been able to do, because you knew about it. And I think that even if you didn't know somehow about Paige's story, you still know so much more about how it all works that you would have been able to feel the fakeness more than I did on that first watch. Now, in the years since, it's not like I've learned a lot, but I've learned some. So when I rewatched it now, I could feel the, like the first time I watched it, I was like, okay, it was a movie. And then this time when I rewatched it, I was like, okay, this is a little fake.
Yes.
And my first thought was, oh, it's because, and I think I mentioned in Contreras Corner, the Iron Claw is just so recent, right? And that felt like a lot more like real life. And so this movie comes along and it says based on a true story. And it just felt, but you know what? I don't mind.
I don't either. That's the thing. Like, I think this is perfectly fine. I was messaging my partner in crime, Joel Hubert, earlier today. And I said, this isn't a bad movie by any means. It's just fucking hilarious when you know anything about wrestling. I appreciate that they don't shy away from her family being nothing but carny fucks. And he said, I recall liking it, though Paige having a movie has aged hilariously. So I guess to give more insight to that real quick. So she eventually got out of her deal with WWE. I can't remember if they released her, her contract expired, or they just came to a mutual parting. And then she was able to find a doctor who would clear her. And so she went to AEW, All Elite Wrestling, and she wrestles there now.
Oh, so she's back wrestling?
Yeah, I saw her in Chicago when I went there. She was in a six-woman tag, and at their all-in event this past, when was that? August. There was an event they had at Wembley Stadium in the United Kingdom that, you remember when we talked about AEW previously, I always said it's kind of weird that a non-WWE show is drawing these crowds. Mm-hmm. They drew like 70,000 people to Wembley Stadium for this. And Paige won their women's title, defeating Hikaru Shida, Dr. Britt Baker, and Toni Storm in a four-way match. And since it was in the United Kingdom, you best believe her family found a way to worm their way in there. And her whole fucking family came out with her for her entrance. They all stood there just looking like the true workers they are. And, you know, they got their moment together. She won the belt. She's since lost it, I believe. I don't watch AEW as closely as I do WWE, so you'll have to forgive me. But yes, she lost it to Shida. And so it was basically like her to have her moment there in the UK. I don't know if she's been like outspoken about her time in WWE or anything like that. It was similar to the Daniel Bryan thing, Bryan Danielson, excuse me, of the WWE eventually cleared him to wrestle. But my understanding is their protocol for that shit is a bit more intensive, or it could just be more political that they don't want to risk anything. But I just know it got to an impasse where they just weren't going to let her wrestle, and she still wanted to. So she went to AEW. And she's doing that now. Unfortunately, like I said, I keep making reference to her being kind of an idiot. She is not very good at social media and arguing with people. And not really understanding what the term bullying means. Arguing with fans, and she's married to this guy who is a musician named Ronnie Radke, who I don't even know, Falling in Reverse is the band that he's in. But he's a guy that has assault allegations against him. He was in prison for... there was a situation where he was in a fight where a guy died, and she's extremely defensive of him. And, you know, the whole anti-cancel culture, like that type of thing. She hasn't painted the best picture for herself in kind of the wake of this movie. And again, I know it's been 5 years since this movie came out, but
are you saying she Gina Carano herself?
Not that bad. No. I mean, AEW is the promotion that like caters to like the progressive fan base, I guess you would say, which is fine. No issues with that. But, you know, she hasn't messed up bad enough for them to condemn her or anything like that. It's just,
I was about to say, if that's the progressive wrestling promotion, then,
well, here's the point, Julio. No one in wrestling is progressive. The people who run AEW contributed $1 million to Donald Trump's campaign. It's just like it's a marketing ploy for them to sell like wrestling is for everybody. We welcome everybody here. It is a gimmick, yes. But sometimes people fuck up even so bad that those companies have to take action. And she's not in that category yet. It's kind of what Joe said. It's just, it's aged kind of comedically that there's a biopic about fucking Paige. To give you an insight into the mind of her father, who you see at the end of the movie, you saw that guy, right? Okay.
He cried.
He was disappointed that he was going to be portrayed by Nick Frost because he wanted to be played by Ray Winstone. But when he saw Nick Frost's performance, he said he's actually pretty good.
I want the quote from Ray Winston. What does Ray Winston think about this?
And he said, who? All that aside, and like I said, my mixed emotions about Paige, because I really liked her in her WWE run, because like I said, she stood out, she looked different, and she had a great headbutt. I mean, honestly, one of the best headbutts I've ever seen a wrestler have. She would load it up and throw it, and like, because she had that wild hair, it just looked so good. Like, every time it looked like she was just fucking cracking the shit out of the other person's head with her own. It was, and that's the best you can do in wrestling, when you do something and it looks extremely real and it's not. That is the art. And she had at least that one facet mastered. I remember when her and AJ beat the Bellas at WrestleMania that one year, it was kind of an interesting little wrinkle to everything that had gone on up until that point. It was kind of like the, for lack of a better phrase, the outcast beat the popular girls. That's kind of what it felt like in that moment. And that's, you know, that trickled down. And once Sasha, Becky, and Charlotte came in, that's when the whole women's revolution happened. And she was a bit of a pioneer for, you know, what she was doing at the time. And I don't think this movie does enough to really express that. It's more just interested in being like, oh, there were four girls that made this tryout and she doesn't look like the other three. And I know there's lines of dialogue inserted in there, but I think there's things that could have been improved upon it. But for what it is, it's fine. It's a fine, cliche-ridden sports movie, you know, biopic, like we were saying. And we make the joke in our Iron Claw discussion about, you know, have you never seen a biopic before? Do you know how many accuracies are in Walk the Line? And that movie was nominated for a whole slew of awards. And the one thing I will say that I didn't call out in the first half that I found just unbelievably funny, because I know it's not intentional, but God, it cracked me up. When she gets to Florida, she's acting like she's seeing sunshine for the first time. She's like looking in like
the whole squinting. Depiction of America, really. Yeah.
She sees a pool and she's like, what the bloody hell's this? And it's great. I mean, I think it does a good job of representing. She didn't come from squalor, obviously, but like the conditions she lived in there to what she made for herself here. And that kind of annoys me in her story too. I don't, you know, never turn your back on your family, but I'm sure they seem like the people that still try to leech every penny they can from her.
When I come back to Superstars, we'll have full houses every night. We'll be shifting a ton of merchandise. You should buy shares in us.
And if I was her, you know, I'd almost approach it like, fuck you, man. I got out of that. I did more than y'all ever did in this industry that you just expected me to be in. And so now I have a living for myself. But, you know, her brother, who couldn't cut in the WWE, when she got into AEW, she made sure to find a job for him there, because Tony Khan can't say no to anyone. So now her brother's like her bodyguard. And at least on my circles of Twitter, everyone just talks about how terrible he is. Wait.
He's her bodyguard, like a real bodyguard or bodyguard as part
on,
of like
on TV, on like part of the storyline.
Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about the brother for a minute, because you brought it up in Contreras Corner. I think maybe in real talk. Yeah, the actor's good. But also maybe that is the biggest disservice to the movie that came from you being so familiar with that family and me not being familiar, because I really like what they did with that character, with the brother character. And I found that that was really what elevated the movie a little for me. Just the idea that we get to see this guy who is doing everything right in his mind, you know, and it's just that he's not good enough. He's just not what they're looking for. And then having to see him deal with the fallout of being rejected and having to just recontextualize his life and his goals, I thought that that was very, very, very cool, like very interesting. And I felt for him, you know, even now that we're in real talk, even when he goes off script and gets into a real fight with her, that scene was, I was on the edge of my seat, might be too much, but I was really like interested. You know, that's a really, really interesting moment, a very compelling conflict between a brother and a sister and the parents watching and all that stuff. It's like, what's going to happen next? And can he recover from this, or is he going completely off the deep end? And so I was fully invested in that story, and I like where it landed, right? He ends up basically coming to terms with the fact that he is not a superstar. He's not somebody that's going to, he doesn't have that quality, but he can still teach and he can do good, like make a difference in his own way. And because it's Paige's story, it really underplays that, you know, it gives him a couple of scenes and then he calls her and that's up, but it's not the focus. And I think that actually makes it play even better, because we're not, you know, they're not hitting you over the head with that. They're too busy hitting you over the head with how awesome Paige is. So I like that a lot, but unless I'm wrong, like it sounds like you couldn't really connect to it because you know what the real Zach is.
I mean, like, the rest of the squad just seems to be a bit of an idiot. I remember he was blaming, if I remember this correctly, he was blaming William Regal, who...
Of Regal Cinemas?
Of Regal Cinemas, exactly. William Regal was like a coach and like one of the guys who helped run NXT. There was some situation around the time the movie came out where he was saying he was blocking him from getting signed to the WWE and blamed all these other people. And like, you know, we're way farther along with this now, but it's just, there's what they're looking for there is very, very specific. And sometimes people really can't handle when they get rejected from it. I understand that, you know, I know what it's like to get turned down for a job you really want. So, but I do remember several times of him making excuses for people that like were trying to prevent him from getting there. And trust me, with the people they've signed, you gotta be really bad for them to say no to you.
Wrestling wise, were these people okay? Like on the
in the movie, yeah. Tessa Blanchard was good at what she did. She just is another one who's in. She Gina Carano'd herself, like in like to scale, like you know, for what she in a moment had in wrestling to where she is now. She Gina Carano'd herself. Paige is still doing all right.
But so wait, are you telling me that's not Florence Pugh didn't do the wrestling? It wasn't just that match at the end, like the entire movie.
My understanding is that Tessa Blanchard was putting in the work. I don't know. Maybe Florence Pugh hit a suicide dive. It looked like she definitely executed that page turner at the end. So good on her. Yeah, the wrestling was fine. It's so hard to capture. It's so hard. And, you know, the Iron Claw, one of its biggest failings was on the wrestling side of things, not just in the sense of, you know, trying to present it as real sometimes and fake as others. But then the Iron Claw, where it really stumbled, was it would try to present entire matches in 3-minute form. And that just doesn't work. That one of the successes of the wrestler is that it would just show you high points of matches, or we now resume Randy the Ram versus the Ayatollah, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ready to Rumble, the whole third act is a fucking match, which just kills it. Like, if you don't like wrestling, who gives a shit? So here they do about the best they can in the sense of high spots and portraying like the, you know, what she's training and then showing her executing that in a match. The end is so stupid. They should have just done the whole match. They should have had a sequence where Florence Pugh's talking to Zelina Vega backstage. Zelina's like, all right, we're going to go out there. I'll put you in my finish. You reverse it. 1, 2, 3, we're out of there. And, you know, that's you can still have that moment where Florence Pugh doesn't tell Nick Frost and the gang this is what's happening, so they're watching at home and they're just as surprised as everybody. But
yeah, but that's that. I mean, that takes care of the surprise, but it doesn't really provide you with any like suspense. Because if you're, I mean, I'm not defending what they did. I think that that's also the weakest part of the movie, but they have to come up with a way of telling us, you know, getting to that ending and making us, you know, they have to give her that crisis. Dumbly, I think what they did was like, oh, we're going to make it to where it's a real fight. So is she going to be able to win this real fight? But they could have done something else that has to do more with the performance instead of the outcome of the fight. It's weird because I watched it this time knowing that that was going to happen, right? And so I was trying to force logic and a reading. And I was thinking, no, maybe, you know, we didn't see them have that talk, but we're still, you know, that talk did happen. And what we're seeing on her face is she's just freezing, you know, freezing in a performance. She's not freezing because, oh my God, I'm in a real fight and I don't know if I can beat this woman, but more like when an actor forgets his lines, you know? So
it's someone just had the idea that we need the climax to be more epic than it actually was, when in reality, I think it would have been, even for just the general going public, more impactful for her to go over her match with like the champion at that time. And like, you could have Vince Vaughn there, like agenting the match or some shit, and to show that she belongs there, as opposed to at the very end of the movie trying to suddenly spin it like you haven't been saying this is fake bullshit for the past hour and a half. Right. So it's again, I think this movie's fine, but that they could have really done something with that ending that made it more impactful. The ending is a big swing and a miss for me.
Yeah, I think that maybe what you do is you make the climax has to be her coming out of that room. You know, Vince Vaughn keeps like knocking on the door, and that's the big moment. The big decision is her finishes a phone call with her brother, takes a deep breath and exits. And that's how, you know, that's like, that's the end of the movie. She decided that she's part of this world. And then the match that follows is just kind of like the epilogue, you know, it's like, what do you want to see? But the real big moment is that instead they built it to where the big moment is the match. And that's weird because I'm like, wait, you were telling me that it's all fixed. Why is she acting like she doesn't know what's happening? That aside though, Alex, would this now jump to the top of your Florence Pugh performances?
Oh, I don't know. What did we decide that I've seen? I've seen Little Women, Midsummer, this, and Oppenheimer. Not that she has much to do in my opinion, any of those movies, but Oppie, definitely least of which. Yeah. She is British, right?
I think so. She is not American.
She's from Oxford. All right, yeah. So the accent wasn't put on. I don't know. Yeah, I guess. Because like, there's actually a full range of emotions, it seems, that she goes through. And I know people that are Midsummer believers will point to many moments of that movie, but it's just... How about this? She accomplishes, we can call it a tie. She accomplishes it in less with 40 minutes to spare for Midsummer. She accomplishes a full range performance here.
I guess what I really should have asked is, do you finally get the appreciation for Florence Pugh? Because she's one of those.
Dog, I never disliked her. I dislike Midsummer. It was like, what I had seen of her was Midsummer and Little Women, and I was like, nah. And then Oppenheimer came out, and I think as much as I love that movie and as much as I think everyone loves that movie, they would agree for the importance of her character, she doesn't really have much to do. I think she's really good with the little she's given in it. Mm-hmm. So it was never a sense of me not appreciating her or not thinking she was like up to task. It was just, you know, the sample size I had was pretty small.
All right. Well, at least now I feel like maybe we're closer to being on the same page to where, you know, I'll say, hey, there's Florence Pugh. And you'll be like, oh, okay, that's Florence Pugh. You know, or, that's good. As opposed to me going like, oh, there's Florence Pugh. And you're like, who gives a fuck? She doesn't miss something.
I'll tell you, she's better than Bryce Dallas Howard. That's someone I still see. And I'm like, why?
Why? Because The Village, Alex. That's why.
Fair. That's her best performance.
Your brother's a journeyman.
No.
Yes.
No.
There's stars. And then there's journeymen who take the hits to make the stars look good. And your brother's a journeyman.
Vince Vaughn, Alex. It's real talk now. They work. They not work for you.
Yes and no. He's too nice of everything I've heard and read about what it's like to be in the WWE developmental system. But I buy his sincerity because Vince Vaughn's a good actor.
Yep.
So I think the conundrum I have with his role and performance is that I'm too close to the source material. But he, in his individual performance, A-OK.
Did you like the little reveal that when he'd been talking about the match where he fell 30 feet or whatever, that was against The Rock?
I guess. <It's>, there's no match where Dwayne threw someone off of a cage, so I don't...
I cannot make fun of you for just basically having a parallel to real life with every single thing that happens in this movie, because I do the same thing with, you know, I can do the same thing with the MCU, you know, I'll be like, oh, well, Spider-Man never did this. Or that's not what Doctor Strange says when he makes a spell or whatever. So
Jason would never kick a dog.
Exactly. Still, they call him Sex Tape Alex because he makes people famous.
Guarantee Dwayne did that. He was like, hey, I got this idea. I was thinking about it the other night when I was working out at 3 a.m.
He seemed pretty proud of it, too. That big smile. We've been making fun of The Rock through Contrarian's Corner and through Real Talk. But okay, what comes down to it? I mean, how do you feel about this? I'm kind of like on the fence. I think that he is very charming. Man, I mean, if he was not as charming as he is or as he can be, I think his two scenes in this movie would be insufferable. So there's that. At the same time, I'm like, man, this is a little too much.
You also haven't seen, like, you have nowhere near the time with him that I have in the sense of, like, seeing him do this exact shit for decades on end. That is why, historically chronicled on The Contrarians, Pain and Gain, Southland Tales. That is, like, to me, The Rock as an actor, because it's so far away from everything I've seen of him for the past 25 years and, like, everything that he recycles and does when he's on wrestling television or anything that's tangentially related to wrestling, like a question about wrestling. This is the same shit he does every time. And now, because he's, you know, going to run for president one day, he's being a nice guy, like what he does when he's on the phone with Paige's family and whatnot. So it works, though, if you find it charming.
Yeah, I mean, I was talking about the, I guess it's two things, right? Like, this is a performance, which I think he can pull off because he's charming. The part that I think gives me pause is that I felt like there were like Shyamalan levels of oh, I need to make myself the center of, or no, rather, I am aware of how big I am and how much power I can wield. And I am going to, instead of being humble or coy about it, I am going to make myself take part of this story. Because, you know, it didn't have to be The Rock that plays this role. I'm not talking about, you know, as an actor, but also the character didn't have to be The Rock, right? We kind of joked about it in Contreras Corner. I mean, it could have been a different wrestler. Or am I wrong? I mean, did it have to be The Rock? Because he's just like the biggest star.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense why he's there anyway when they audition, but...
But it's like, you know, if you get who, you know, we said Triple H, like 90% of the audience.
The whole reason like this movie got like a real treatment of a movie is because The Rock like invested in it and wanted it to happen. If this was just another WWE Pictures and they got fucking, you know, Chris Jericho or some bum to be in there, yeah, it wouldn't have been mattered anywhere near as much.
The Miz. The Miz is there. Just
yeah, there you go.
Today, would it be John Cena?
That would make more sense. But again, you go up to a star that level when you're there for a tryout, they're going to say, get the fuck out of here.
But John Cena's a nice guy.
Okay.
You can probably tell, but I actually like this movie a lot. And I was wondering if this was going to irritate you beyond any level of, you know, where you wouldn't be able to enjoy the movie just because we're like, it is bullshit. You'd be like one of those reviewers that were like, this Hollywood bullshit. Or if you would kind of maybe not succumb to
if it to was a charms. Bad movie, if it was a bad movie, I'd have much bigger issues with it. The Iron Claw is a lot better than this, in my opinion, but it's similar to that of like, you know, I called out all the egregious inaccuracies and embellishments in that movie, but it was mostly for me just like, well, I don't care because I'm really enjoying this. And with this, it's similar. Like I said, the fallout with Soraya is added a different wrinkle to it, and watching it in 2024 is my thoughts on the subject matter are a lot different than they would have been if I saw this in 2019. But I'm still able moment to moment to separate that. And when I was watching this, I'm like, this is a fine movie. The ending's kind of dumb the way it's presented, but it's acted well. There's a solid, you know, coherent story there. And yeah, it's fine. It's a perfectly acceptable movie. If you want me to break down all the ways it's wrong and hilarious and its oversights and, you know, its embellishments, to use that word again, I can definitely do that. But for what it is at the surface, it's fine.
So what's the Alex Matters grade on it?
Like a B minus, C plus, 3 stars, 3.5, maybe, probably 3 stars on Letterboxd. So I enjoy it.
Yeah, I am around that level. I'm going to land on 3.5, partly because that means that it's on the same step as Kill Bill 2. And that amuses me.
There's your advice. Straight out of the jabroni beating, pie eating, trail blazing, eyebrow raising, entertaining the globe never hotter, talking to two rejects from Harry Potter.
Thus comes to an end the story of fighting with my family.
The WrestleMania 40 bonus episode. We're going to have to start digging deeper in the crates to find some famous wrestling movies for 41, 42, etc.
I have an idea that I'll throw your way when the time comes next year. But I hope that you're bulking up your arsenal too, so that we can have a discussion. Coming up next, Alex, it's a movie that we were going to record 3 weeks ago or so, and then life happened. So we're gonna try again. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Toni Collette.
Hereditary. Okay. I'm not going to watch it again.
That's okay. I'm assuming you have your notes. So Hereditary, another fresh movie demanded by patron John Amenta. So I know he knows what we do on this show. So if you thought that we nitpicked Fighting With My Family, man, just wait till we get started on Hereditary. But that's coming up next.
Well, with that being said, that wraps up our episode on Fighting With My Family. Enjoy WrestleMania. We're recording this weeks in advance, so by the time you listen to this, I will already be wrought with anxiety as to whether or not Cody Rhodes will be finishing the story. I will be praying. I will be hoping. I will be decked out in my Cody Rhodes merch. But if you need to do something to kill time before WrestleMania weekend begins, fire up Fighting With My Family. It's on YouTube, free with ads. All right, Julio, so let's get out of here.
Bollocks to the rock. Let's get out of here.
Welcome to our end credits.
Or as we usually call them, our perennial plugs.
We start off by giving thanks to the Festive Years, who provide our opening and closing tracks. They kick us off with Last Stand and take us home with Summer of 99. Be sure to head over to thefestiveyears.com for any and all Festive Years needs.
Our friend and fellow podcaster Hans Rothgeiser is the man behind our logo and all the art you see related to our show. Reach out to him and let him know how much you like that little tomato. His email address is mildemonios@hotmail.com and his website is mildemonios.pe. That's mildemonios. You can also check out his podcast Nación Combi about Peruvian current affairs and Marginal about economy. Hans, thank you for all your support.
For those interested in the regularly absurd world of professional wrestling, Joe and the boys over at latenightgrin.com have you covered. Tell them the Contrarian sent you.
And we'd like to close with special thanks to our social media team of Zoe Perez and Corey Ari. Each of the social media accounts we mentioned in the introduction look as good as they do because of their work.
So that'll do it for this episode of The Contrarians, where we're right and you're wrong, and we will catch you next time. How much money?
made to get around.